Hey y'all, this is Kevin Bass from thedoubtwars.com. I'm a medical student and PhD student, finishing my PhD and about to finish my medical degree as well, and head out to the great world of clinical medicine soon. But in, you know, my spare time, I like to dispel misinformation and, of course, learn more about science. And these two activities are actually closely tied together for me, because sometimes I'll hear some sort of claim. I'll be like, is that really true? Because I want to know, like, if it's true, then maybe we can use that information. And then I'll look deeper into it, and I'll find usually the more sensational claims are not true. And so that's what I've done here. I saw this clip on YouTube, or sorry, it was Instagram, actually. Podcast number 277 in the Lex Fridman podcast with Andrew Huberman. And they're talking about sauna. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to systematically dismantle this misinformation about sauna use. And I'll explain each and every, like, minute detail about why it's wrong. And hopefully we can get this done pretty quick. But I'm going to explain every single claim. Let's hit it.
If you get into a sauna the way I just described, 30 minutes twice a week or three times per week, you reduce the likelihood of dying of a cardiovascular event by 27%. If you do it four or more times per week, you reduce the probability of dying by 50%. It's very clear that what you need is the release of something called dynorphin, which is the terrible feeling that you get when you're in really hot temperatures. It's also the terrible effect that alcoholics feel when they are in withdrawal. That's what you're trying to trigger. When you do that, a number of things happen. You set off heat shock proteins that go repair broken proteins. It also makes it so that later endorphin binds its receptor more strongly.
All right, so in this video, I'm gonna address three claims in particular. First claim is his mortality benefit claims, which I think are not supported by the literature and not supported by the evidence. I'm gonna explain exact and precise detail how that is not the case. Second thing I'm gonna address is this heat shock protein claim, that heat shock proteins are responsible for the health effects of sauna. There's no evidence that that's the case. And then last, we're gonna talk about dynorphin and what we know about dynorphin. And in each case, I'm gonna show that it doesn't seem that any of his claims are supported by anything in the scientific literature. Okay, so the first claim that he made was based on this paper, association between sauna bathing and fatal cardiovascular and all-cause mortality events. And it showed that the more frequency you have with the sauna, the lower your risk of cardiovascular events, all-cause mortality, etc. And his numbers that he used for the podcast with Lex are exactly the same numbers that were reported by this paper. So it's exactly the same thing. The problem with this paper is that there was a commentary published by Kivimaki, and it's called "The Link Between Sauna Bathing Mortality May Be Non-Causal." And I want to focus on one particular criticism in particular. And I'm just going to read it off. "Simple adjustment for disease versus no disease may not entirely solve the problem of reverse causation bias, because it operates within disease groups. The more severe disease, the greater the fear of cardiac challenge. Consistent with this reasoning, the association between saunas and sudden cardiac death was seen in individuals with diabetes, but not without. Among hypertensive but not normotensive individuals, among patients with cardiovascular disease but not their healthy counterparts. A more robust finding at reduced risk of reverse causation bias would be a graded association between number of sauna sessions and mortality in an initially healthy cardiorespiratory fit population, but this was not observed. We urge caution against the interpretation that saunas are a major cardiovascular prophylactic." And to respond to this, well, the authors responded not very compellingly, and I'm going to explain why that's the case. But first, I want to explain like exactly what this means. So this, the relationship between sauna bathing and mortality and cardiovascular events only existed in people with disease. It didn't exist in healthy people. It only existed in people with disease. What does this mean? The idea is, if it also existed in healthy people, that would suggest that maybe even in healthy people, it's causally preventing death or cardiovascular events. But the fact that it's only happening in sick people suggests that among sick people, the people who are more sick are just not able to go into the sauna, whether they're disabled or they're too fatigued or they're afraid of the challenge of the sauna because it's a quite stressful experience to be in the sauna. They're simply not going into the sauna. So actually, sauna bathing frequency and duration may be associated with just reduced disease severity. And if you have reduced disease severity, you're less likely to die of cardiovascular events in general in the near future. So this relationship between sauna bathing and lower risk of disease might actually be reverse causation. It's actually you have lower risk of disease, which causes you to be able to sauna bathe more often. And this is, again, because this relationship between more sauna bathing and lower risk of disease was not found in healthy people. It was only found in people at risk for disease, or sorry, with diseases, with hypertension, with cardiovascular disease, with diabetes. It was not seen in healthy people, suggesting that there's a reverse causation problem going on here. It's people who are really sick who are unable to do sauna bathing versus people who are less sick with those same diseases who are able to do sauna bathing, who are dying more, but not because they're not doing sauna bathing, but because they're simply more sick. This is the problem with epidemiological research. Now, it's not that epidemiology isn't useful. It is. Epidemiology is useful, but you have to understand what the limitations are in order to draw the right conclusions, and the right conclusions aren't being drawn in this particular case. So let's go revisit the criticism real quick, and then we're going to go address a response to the criticism by Rhonda Patrick. So here, the criticism is, simple adjustment for disease versus no disease may not entirely solve this problem, since reverse causation bias operates within disease groups. Okay, so Rhonda Patrick has a response to this, or at least in her review about this, she has a response. And her review is called Sauna Use as a Lifestyle Practice to Extend Lifespan. And she writes, similarly, whereas reverse causation bias figures prominently in observational studies and is a valid concern when investigating links between cardiovascular disease and lifestyle, the KIHD findings, this is the study, the original study we're talking about, were adjusted for potential biases, including lifestyle factors such as socioeconomic status, physical activity, and cardiorespiratory fitness. So it's just confusing because the original commentary says simple adjustment for disease versus no disease may not entirely solve this problem. She's saying, well, they adjusted for disease versus no disease, but they didn't see it still didn't affect the relationship. But what these guys are saying is you can't actually adjust away that problem. You have to actually see the reduction in risk for using the sauna among healthy people, and you don't. It doesn't matter how much adjustments you do, you don't see the reduction among healthy people. Okay, cool. So that's like the first thing. So this criticism is never really responded to. It's just summarily dismissed. It's summarily dismissed in this review. So that's not good science in my opinion, but let's continue on to the next claim. So we talk about the mortality benefit claim. Let's talk about the heat shock protein claim. So Huberman claims that heat shock proteins are the mediating mechanism by which sauna reduces mortality. And actually this is interesting because Rhonda does the same thing. She says in particular, the risk of all-cause mortality was 40% lower among frequent sauna users compared to infrequent users, independent of conventional risk factors. So it's basically going to be based on not these conventional risk factors, but on stuff like as we pointed out, heat shock proteins. That's like the mechanism that these guys are promoting. But what's the problem with the heat shock proteins? Is there's no good evidence in the heat shock protein literature that this is the case. So I'm going to read Rhonda's paragraph. And she's got, it says, one of the protective adaptive mechanisms to heat stress is the increased expression of heat shock proteins. Heat shock proteins comprise a large, highly conserved family of proteins that are present in all cells. Heat shock proteins are also present in the extracellular environment. They play a prominent role in many cellular processes, including immune function, cell signaling, cell cycle regulation, and proteome homeostasis. Loss of proteome integrity is a hallmark of aging process. An intrinsically disordered or damaged dysfunctional proteins are common features in age-related diseases such as cardiovascular disease and neurodegenerative diseases. Increased expression of heat shock proteins prevents protein expression and aggregation, protein disorder and aggregation by repairing proteins that have been damaged, and animal evidence suggests that heat shock proteins may offer protection against neurodegenerative diseases. Heat shock proteins also moderate muscle atrophy. Findings from a small interventional study in rodents demonstrated that local heat application during immobilization decreased muscle atrophy by 37%. So there's not a single animal model that shows that increased expression of heat shock proteins actually causes this longevity phenotype. And this leak, I don't know. I haven't even looked at this. Is it a review? Maybe a review. It's a review. We're not looking at it because it's a review. Okay, but in any case, what I decided to do is, okay, if increased heat shock proteins reduces mortality, if it increases longevity, then we should see in animal models where you increase the expression of heat shock proteins, you should be seeing a longevity phenotype. Because we actually see that with stuff like autophagy genes. If you increase autophagy expression, you're going to get a longevity phenotype sometimes. In these particular cases, for heat shock proteins, that's not the case. Look, so overexpression of heat shock protein 70 in mice is associated with growth retardation, tumor formation, and early death. This paper showed if you increase the expression of heat shock proteins in these mice, you actually kill them earlier. They die earlier. So contrary to what she says here, heat shock proteins actually cause these animals to die earlier. Well, so that's interesting. So what does that mean exactly? Well, if you go look at the heat shock protein heat shock protein literature, it's not that heat shock proteins are like protecting these animals and they're like making sure that they like, you know, live longer. They're actually just preventing proteins from being misfolded. They're just an adaptive response to damage. Why do you think that just increasing the expression of something that just responds to damage is necessarily going to produce a longevity phenotype? And furthermore, if you're doing sauna and you're inducing damage and you need heat shock proteins to compensate for it, is that a good thing? Like, how is that a good thing if you're inducing damage and you're expressing, like, repair enzymes and stuff? You're causing damage. That would be my way of looking at it, as far as I can tell. Okay, well, so the only models, the animal models that we have are showing that heat shock proteins actually cause a shorter life. The only human studies that we have are seriously confounded, and these confounding problems are basically overlooked. They're basically overlooked by Rhonda Patrick and Huberman whenever they interpret the research literature. They kind of ignore it. There's no randomized controlled trial that shows that if you assign people to sauna versus not assigning them to sauna, they live longer. There's no literature like that. But instead, we only have this highly confounded observational literature. Yet, often these claims are made with these great amount of certainty and sort of almost a zealousness on these podcasts that are listened to by millions of people. Well, okay, be that as it may, so I decided to like fact check the last thing. You talked about dynorphin and how dynorphin is important for the expression of heat shock protein. So I looked in Rhonda Patrick's review, and she says that dynorphin is an opioid that is generally responsible for the sensation of dysphoria, a profound sense of unease or dissatisfaction. Dynorphin may also mediate the body's response to heat, helping the body to cool. Heat activates neurons in the dorsal lateral parabrachial nucleus that express dynorphin. The activation of this thermosensory pathway elicits heat defense responses in which the binding of dynorphin to kappa opioid receptors triggers cellular events that promote pain and distress. The heat stress caused by sauna may promote dynorphin release, which may be responsible for the general sense of discomfort experienced from heat exposure. So Kuberman says that dynorphin causes the expression of heat shock proteins. I don't see that anywhere. I don't see that anywhere here. I don't see anywhere in this review that that's the case. I Googled it. I couldn't find anything. I went in PubMed. I couldn't find anything. If it's true that dynorphin causes the upregulation of heat shock proteins, cool. But I still couldn't even get this fact to work out. But if it does, that's cool. But if it does, it's kind of irrelevant because the human data isn't good. There's no good animal data. The animal data that we have shows that animals die earlier. So why do we peddle this story? It's kind of simple, all right? It's like you say new things, you say new exciting things, you make people think that they're in the know. Like, I'm learning this new stuff. I'm in the like cutting edge of what everything is. And then you make basically making people feel good about themselves. You're basically flattering people's egos. And so many of these people get basically like idolized because they're flattering lay people's egos to make them think that they're in the know and they know more than other people or something about longevity and all this stuff. But there's no evidence whatsoever that sauna actually causes these effects. And in fact, there's a new body of literature. John Speakman is kind of a part of this. He published a paper, I want to say it was in Nature Neuroscience or maybe it was in Nature Metabolism. What was it? Sorry, it was in Nature Aging, and it's called Body Temperature Not Metabolic Rate Modulates Lifespan. That's a research highlight. Let's get to the actual paper itself. Sorry, my mistake. Again, it's in Nature Metabolism. It's called Body Temperature is a More Important Modulator of Lifespan than Metabolic Rate in Two Small Animals. And what this study found is actually if you keep the animals hotter over the entire course of their life, that's not the same as acute intermittent heating, to be sure. It's not the same as sauna, to be sure. There's no question about that. But among the evidence that we do have, if you keep these animals hotter for their entire life as opposed to cooler, they end up dying earlier. So again, we have multiple different lines of evidence. The human evidence is not very clear that it gets rid of reverse causation. The animal evidence of overexpressing heat shock proteins actually shows a reduced lifespan. The animal evidence of keeping animals hot for their entire life shows a reduced lifespan. Whereas if you would get more heat shock proteins because they're hot most of the time, you'd expect an increased lifespan. And then many of the mechanisms don't even make sense either. For example, the dynorphin mechanism, I don't think is actually substantiated by the research literature. So again, the question is why are these claims repeatedly stated? It's not a good thing to tell people things that are not true. So this is the basic position I have on this. So I don't know. I would like for things to be different, but they are what they are. So if you like this video, if you like my debunkings in general, my commitment right now is to do 4 kind of positive videos, quote unquote, like 4 new things that people can learn about all sorts of different areas that I'm interested in to every 1 like debunking video. And so I've done my 4, I'm doing my 1 debunking video. And if you like these debunking videos, cool. If you like the positive videos as well, check those out. You can find me on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter at Kevin N. Bass, KevinNBass. You can also find me on Patreon at the same thing. Please donate because I need the money. So send me the money. Send me the money. Send me the money. Patreon. If you do become a patron, you can even I'll prioritize your questions. Of course, I try to respond to as many comments as I can, but I don't always get to everybody's comment. I try to respond to your questions more. And of course, if you're an upper tier patron, you can, talk with me once a month about the various different things I'm reading about and thinking about and things that you might want to know more about yourself. And then check out my website at thedietwars.com. Check out thedietwars.com /support-me if you want to donate directly as opposed to become a patron. If you want to check out the podcast, check out The Kevin Bass Show. Check out YouTube at KBass Philadelphia. That's going to be my YouTube channel. And hope you enjoyed it. Like, comment, subscribe, and let me know what I can do better. give me some feedback. I would very much appreciate the feedback, both positive and negative. And of course, I would probably prefer positive because I get a lot of negative. I think it's just kind of the tendency of the internet. But if I could also get some positive, that would be cool too. So let me know what I'm doing right as well as wrong. So please do that. And then, you know, check things out. See you guys in the next episode. Bye-bye.